It's time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and good evening to you all. It's Tuesday the 22nd of November. This is Taking Care of Business and I'm Ronan Berry. Coming up between now and 8pm, John Costello, Regional Skills Forum Manager, Midlands, will talk about the key findings of the Midlands Advanced Manufacturing Survey 2022, including the critical vacancies identified across the manufacturing sectors in the Midlands. Catherine Collins of First Polymer Training SkillNet will be here to talk about the role that they play in addressing skill shortages in the polymer industry and the opportunities that are exist within that industry at present too. I'll be touching on some of the main news stories from around the region from a business point of view over the course of the evening too. So if you'd like to join that conversation, you can do so by text or WhatsApp on 083 3010 103. That of course is powered by the home of Offaly's top selling car brand, Lamb Brothers Toyota, on the Arden Road in Tullamore. Love to have your voice as part of this conversation this evening. Now, if I was to ask you what day is next Friday, you'll probably jump up out of your seats and say it's Black Friday, because it seems to have become this thing all of a sudden. I think it really only came to Ireland around 2014, and you're probably aware it came from the States initially. It's a major day over there because most people are actually off work on the day, so it makes sense that there might be a big focus on retail and particularly online selling. But in Ireland, have we really embraced it? Like, is it actually grabbing and taking hold the way we thought it would? Because we know it leads into Cyber Monday, and I think that's now been dubbed Cyber Week too. So the question is, will you be buying stuff on Friday because it's Black Friday? Well, 27% of Irish adults, or that's an estimated 1 million people, will shop the Black Friday sales this year, according to the most recent reports. Now, a lot of Irish consumers do not trust Black Friday sale offers. 61% of shoppers do not believe the discounts advertised by retailers during the sale represents real savings. And I suppose it's the old adage, if you don't need it, then it's not a bargain. But it's still not stopping people from going online and buying and stuff. So that's the whole question. If you're buying things that maybe you don't need, or if it's not really a bargain and you're buying lots of, you know, you're indulging maybe in buying stuff and thinking you'll get ahead of the Christmas shopping or that, are you actually saving anything? And also, what is the main impact on the environment, you know, from a sustainability point of view? If we're buying goods we don't need, it's generating packaging, it's generating a lot of delivery charges and carbon emissions, etc. So one local business here in the Midlands has gone out on social media recently and they've proposed 5 ways that you can practice conscious consumerism and basically turn Black Friday green this coming Friday. So drop the notion of Black Friday and begin to think of Green Friday. To find out more, I'm delighted to be joined by the founder of Milby Studios, Jennifer Doyle. A very good evening, Jennifer. Can you talk to us about conscious consumerism and what is it?
Hi, Ronan. Thanks for having me on. I suppose conscious consumerism really, it's a campaign to kind of encourage people to think before the purchase. So, you know, ask yourself, is this a product I really need? Am I going to use it? Is it a reusable product? And what are the environmental impact of my purchase? You know, like, who makes my product? Where has it been made? And then alongside that, there's a lot of people actually encouraging buying local and support more small and independent retailers as opposed to the big brands.
You started a social media campaign last week. You put up your kind of 5 main pointers, your 5 ways to practice conscious consumerism. How has the campaign been received?
Unbelievable, to be honest. Now, it's funny, like, I probably put it up earlier, and because, like, a lot of people, I suppose, now they're thinking of marketing for Christmas, and the topic of Black Friday comes up nearly with every single business nearly or brand. But it's funny, like, when I was starting off, I thought it was nearly something that I should be doing, you know, and then, like, 5 years on, I'm kind of, you know, I'm thinking I don't really need to be doing this, and just looking from the outside, like, it doesn't sit with me, to be honest, anyways, because like, we're a small business, small brand, and, like, you know, we couldn't be competing anyways with the big discounts. But, like, ultimately, it can promote sort of frantic buying and overconsumption as well. But yeah, so the campaign has been going really well, and I've actually noticed a lot more brands and companies are doing similar, which is brilliant.
Yeah, I've seen actually quite a few companies across the Midlands, and some like yourself who are manufacturing and distributing their products, others who are retailers and really trying to get behind this notion of Green Friday rather than Black Friday. Because I know for your own business, things like packaging is a huge thing for you. So you've also kind of put some tips for people there on how to, you know, at least consider the amount of packaging that might be generated by your purchases this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose one other thing to consider is when people do buy, some of the stuff actually has to be posted back. So there's, an environmental cost in that as well. But the packaging is a big thing, and just less is more, really.
Yeah, and actually it is a huge factor. I've often heard of people saying that couriers might be on almost a standardised run every week. They're dropping off products to some houses and going back the following week then to pick most of it back up. People ordering 5 sizes of the one dress just to make sure to get one that fits. So I think there's lots of things for people to consider there when it comes. But Black Friday overall, do you think it provides a boost for businesses, or are people beginning to kind of see maybe through it a little bit and start asking the proper questions?
Yeah, I definitely think people are seeing through it. And I don't think here in Ireland it probably has taken off, as much maybe as it had in America. I think as well, in Ireland, we've a lot of independent businesses here, smaller brands, and you just can't compete with those discounts anyways. I definitely think there's definitely a backlash against it.
So from your own business perspective, to anyone that's not familiar with the business, will probably know by Milby Studios, the hint is in the name there anyway. Yeah. Basically, from hive to home is your tagline, natural, sustainable luxury products made by hand. Yeah. Just give us a quick recap of the main products you've been making.
So we have beeswax food wraps, which are a reusable alternative to cling film, and beeswax candles. So we have a broad range of candles, and this year I've introduced more dipped candles and also a scented candle range, which are made from natural waxes and essential oils. And I also have fans and then other sustainable kind of kitchenware, such as napkins and tea towels.
You've been quite busy. I was checking your social media, obviously, keeping an eye on the Conscious Consumerism campaign, but you've been busy yourself with kind of trade shows and markets around the Midlands.
Yeah. So we're actually just getting ready for Gifted now, which is in a couple of weeks. So that's kind of the big show at the moment. It's massive. It's in Dublin in the RDS.
And that's a great way to get these local artisan, hand-produced brands there too. So from a new product perspective or developing, is that ongoing too? And how do you kind of continue to come up with new products, with beeswax? I'm sure it's not the easiest product to work with.
Yeah, so, well, I suppose my background is in design and I'm always trying to think of new products. I love actually bringing out new products, but I suppose I'm trying to think of, practical products that, and even really research the ingredients as well. But I hadn't gone into scent for a long time, but I just decided to kind of go into it a little bit more this year. But like I was saying, that everything, and even the packaging, the candles I'm using are just simple jars, and I'm not going to do an outer box at the moment. I'm just keeping it less is more.
Perfect. So you're practicing what you're preaching effectively when it comes to the packaging piece too. Is the hamper market or the Christmas market, is that something you're going to be obviously pursuing now?
Yeah, definitely. There are hamper companies as well that look for more sustainable products as well. And I think that's actually a big direction now with the hamper companies at the moment. They're looking for artisan brands, food brands, and gift or craft brands as well.
Excellent. It makes perfect sense too, because I suppose those kind of learnings we got during COVID about particularly about supporting local, and against that's the real message here today. But Jennifer, as always, well done, and it's fantastic to watch the progress and development of Milby, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Thanks a million, Ronan. Thank you.
That's Jennifer Doyle there from Milby Studio. You can check out Jennifer's products on milbee.com. You can email info@milbee.com either if you're looking for more information on some of those products. But those kind of ideas and those things around conscious consumerism, to kind of consider the purchases you need. Do you actually need them? Are the products reusable, or can they be used continuously? Is there a longer life cycle in them than maybe other products? And look at the packaging and maybe all the delivery charges or the net carbon footprint, you know, caused by buying those products too. And I guess if you don't need it, you don't need it. But shop local, look local and keep it local is definitely the message ahead of Black Friday, or as it's been redubbed, Green Friday. Still to come on Taking Care of Business this evening, Catherine Collins of First Polymer Training SkillNet will be here to talk about the role that the SkillNet plays in addressing the skills shortages in the polymer industry, and also look at the opportunities within that sector for people who are either going to college or looking at maybe upskilling or changing employment there. If you're not that familiar with polymer or what the whole polymer sector is, it's definitely worth having a close listen to that, because what you're going to hear will probably be quite surprising and indeed astounding to you. It's kind of one of these industries that is happening there. It's part of almost everything we do. And yet, I'm going to hazard a guess that a lot of you aren't really fully sure that the extent of what's going on in the polymer sector. So that's coming up just after 7:30 this evening. But that whole area of skills and indeed the challenges that companies might be facing in the Midlands, particularly in the manufacturing sector, is something that's kind of ever present. You know, every sector experiences skill shortages or skills gaps there too, but is definitely very prevalent in the manufacturing sector. And bearing in mind, it is a sector that provides long-term sustainable employment right across the Midlands. It's almost what we've become known for here in this region. So to find out more about a recent survey that was done, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome back to studio after a couple of years since he was last here. But John Costello is the Regional Skills Forum Manager Midlands. And John joins me now. John, welcome back. John, tell us, Regional Skills Forum, introduce what it is and just give listeners a recap.
Yeah, listen, thanks a million. Thanks for having me back. The Regional Skills Forum was an initiative that was set up a few years ago. It's made up of all the key stakeholders within the Midlands region. Key stakeholders being all the government agencies, employer reps and all the education and training providers. And basically we're unique in that we look at the whole area of skills, upskilling and the needs that's needed for industry across the Midlands.
Your mandate, does that come from the Midlands region, the action plan for jobs, or where is that mandate coming from?
Yeah, yeah, we're part of what's called the Skills Policy Unit in the Department of Further and Higher Education. So our mandate will come to work with the sectors on the whole skills, the upskilling, reskilling, or in some cases cross-skilling, and to look at what's needed, and more importantly, how it can be addressed and who's best to address it.
And one way you've gone about trying to address some of these, you know, skills gaps or shortages is the Midlands Advanced Manufacturing Survey 2022. It's only released last month. Talk us about the survey, I suppose. What was the key objectives of it?
Yeah, Ronan, the Midlands Advanced Manufacturing Plan came out of what's known as the Regional Enterprise Plan. And part of it, the Regional Skills Forum was asked to look at the whole skills side of it. And I suppose there's no better way when you have to start looking at what's needed is to go and ask the companies what they need in areas of what vacancies they have and, more importantly, what key skills these vacancies require. And then look at the whole area of upskilling and reskilling, and can they see what their current needs are and, more importantly, what they might see in the future.
When we speak about manufacturing companies as surveyed in this, can you give us a snapshot of the types of companies that you would have profiled?
Yeah, I suppose we were lucky in that we went to all company sizes, from SMEs to medium to our multinationals, and we got a lovely cross section of them. We got that's probably a lot of the companies we have might be the whole area of manufacturing, in the whole area of engineering. We then got food, a lot of the food companies. Interestingly, you have Catherine coming on afterwards, because we got some of our plastics, polymers, some of our science companies. So they were the main cross section we got. So I think we got, I suppose, a good sample of size and category of companies.
One of the key findings, or one of the key areas of this, was going to be identifying critical vacancies across the sector. Can you take us through some of the main findings there?
Yeah, listen, we probably knew what we were going for on this one, but at least we got evidence on it. I think in a lot of cases, this was a huge pinch point for companies, in that a lot of them are struggling to fill vacancies at critical levels. Some examples, I suppose, the main area would be entry-level experience. A lot of the companies call them operatives or workers, and that's a word, I suppose, that we're in the plan, we're starting to look at. Is it the right word? Because it might be seen with low skills, and some of these people, while they're entry-level experience, there could be advanced manufacturing, there could be advanced welders, there could be the whole food science people, there could be using even automated machines.
Well, you know, these people potentially are making medical devices, correct, components for cars, yeah, maybe windmill components. All,
yeah, yeah. So the word operative probably, but they're mainly entry level positions and starting point in companies. We also found as well engineers, whether it is mechanical, civil, automation engineers, not there. And what's, I suppose, the frightening part of this as well is we can see through registrations through the third level colleges as well, they're not coming through. All right, because it is a 4-year cycle. And in some cases, while you can reskill or people can do conversion courses in the area of mechanical automation engineers, it requires a little bit more. We also saw, I suppose, a huge need for technicians. Technicians would be probably the people in any of the manufacturing plants that keep the whole show on the road, keep the machines going, maintenance technicians, etc. And I suppose other areas, which was, I suppose, interesting enough, companies came back, about 20% of them, in fact, came back and said they can't get apprentices. And there's a huge push on apprenticeship, the whole earn and learn model of work and learning together. And that was interesting as well, because there is a huge push on that as well. We also, some of them would have given us areas such as supply chain, warehousing, logistics, data analysis, etc. People to, so we got a good understanding, I suppose, of the critical vacancies.
And all those areas you just mentioned, even I know there actually is apprenticeships now available in theirs too. So it's quite interesting, because again, I think when you mentioned the way operatives, maybe the term is slightly outdated. I think even with apprenticeships, sometimes people are thinking of 10, 20 years ago when the choice was scant really about what you could do. You can do it in almost anything now. But getting engineers always has been a challenge there too. But I'm looking here, welders and fabricators, like another area. Again, maybe people are probably not aware of the amount of work and the strategic importance of having like somebody who can weld, because it's not just a case of cobbling two bits of steel together anymore.
Yeah.
What kind of industries or what kind of companies are looking for welders at the minute in the Midlands?
Listen, it's fair to say a lot of the Midlands companies are involved in manufacturing or engineering. So, and it's everything from basic welding to advanced welding to orbital welding, which is very advanced welding. And I suppose a lot of the key skills, and in some cases, welding can be seen as merely a dirty skill or a dirty job, you know. But in areas where it has advanced and has advanced, we have seen robotic welders. We have companies in the Midlands using robotic welders. We have seen the orbital welders as well. But I suppose one of the key things that came out of it as well is that welders have to have good eyesight. You know, so in a lot of cases, you might see young people in welding, and why they but it's a lot of it can be down to precision and come down to with the rise. But that's one example, I suppose. Welders, fabricators. So you're kind of cross skilled. You're manufacturing and you're welding at the same time. And if you think of the fabrication apprenticeship at the moment, it doesn't do a whole lot of welding. So that's something we can feed into saying, you know, maybe we need to bring more welding into the fabrication. Tool makers can't be got. And that is a huge, huge area. I think one of the main areas that came out of it is the whole area of technicians. And if anybody is listening and they're involved in manufacturing, in a lot of cases, you might have somebody who was very good on the electrical, some are very good on the fitting side. So we're going to try to cross-skill maintenance people. So I suppose that's going to be a challenge. What we also came across on that is we have a lot of, some people who are working in that area because of their ability to fix. And they're not qualified in it. So companies are looking at some way of RPL, recognition of prior learning. How can they get them certified, you know? And we would have seen some companies expressing an interest in that as well, you know?
Having identified and got the data around these critical vacancies, how do you then progress at looking at trying to fill those gaps? Because a lot of these companies, even in light of what's happening out there in the kind of the macro environment, are still looking to expand, looking to take on new people as well. So how is this survey going to help them try to fill these vacancies? I'm going to guess it's not a 12-month plan anyway.
It's definitely not a 12-month plan. And in fairness, some of the companies have looked abroad to try and recruit from abroad. And why that might be, how would I put it, initial, I suppose, filling the gap over a short term. I suppose one thing that came out of it was to generate careers in the sector. So you might start as a, we use the word operative, entry and apprentice, but you're going into a sector that can offer you a career path and pathways. So we've linked up, I suppose, and we gave a very good example. What was interesting, two guys in particular who participated in the survey, one of them is running a small SME and he started as an operative. Right, and he's big into trying to promote. Listen, if we go looking for an apprentice or an operative, maybe we need to say, yes, start there. We can put you in an apprenticeship. Maybe you can come become an engineer. Maybe you might want to move sideways into logistics, warehousing, quality, or whatever. So that is one way of trying to long term trying to look at it as well. I think what's coming out of it is, initially, if we can try and help them to fill the vacancies, bearing in mind we have very low unemployment. All right. If we can try and help them, in some cases, they're looking at dealing with the Department of Social Protection, reaching out to our colleagues in Europe. That has its own thing, bringing in European workers with regard to housing, etc. But more importantly, developing courses that have progression paths. So that if John or Ronan starts or Mary starts, you know, listen, I'll do 2 or 3 years at this and I can progress. And what we need to do in the whole education and training side is to link up the relevant upskilling courses. And promote how all of that is done through whether it is our ETBs or our Springboard, and a lot of that can be done online, can be done as how would I put it, block release, etc. So that's something we have to try and look at there.
If people could only get a sense of the products, the components, the things that are manufactured in the Midlands that are going across the globe, in that are, you know, based, you know, they're part of interventions in healthcare and emergency trauma scenarios. Parts of some of the most famous car brands are coming from the Midlands. And you've mentioned, like, these are, and let's not call them a job for life. You're getting into a sector here in the manufacturing that really could set somebody up for life. I'm not suggesting it has to be with just one company. So how is that message going to get out to these people that, look, there is a major opportunity here close to home?
Yeah, it is something. And I think what's coming out as well is some of the companies, especially when we start working in groups, we have our advanced manufacturing cluster group, the companies realise they've got to get out and promote their sector. And you're right, we have some of the motor components manufacturing for Tesla. We have some of our pharma companies making stints for heart bypasses, right? And these are, I suppose, people who come in at entry-level positions. But these are the products that they're making. But I think the companies realise they've got to go out as well and sell their products to potential new staff, you know. And in some cases, it can be a very exciting career, you know.
It also looked at that critical area, current skills versus future skills needs. And this is kind of feeding into the whole idea of the jobs that exist now, or the jobs that are going to be, that your kids are going to be doing in 10 years' time, don't currently exist and all that. Maybe not as much change going to happen in manufacturing, but what were the key findings here?
The key findings there was the whole area, I suppose, of technical and operational level. And I suppose that sounds a little bit technical, if you excuse the pun, right? But areas such as, if we go back to the engineering, the advanced welding, the robotic welding. So we know, but this is the way we have to go, right? Areas such as the whole area of automation and robotics. And that's not to be feared. I mean, that's where companies are going, and that's not going to necessarily mean job losses. But we need to make sure that the workforce out there is upskilled in areas like that. Other areas such as quality, lean, be more efficient, etc., came across. And I think we gathered some very good information on the whole area from companies on what skills they would require, knowledge and attitudes. And the attitude is the one that's hard. All right, you can, as they say, you can learn the knowledge aspect, you can practice the skills, but it's the attitudes. Areas such as critical thinking, teamwork, and communications. I suppose stuff that a lot of kids are doing in school now and going through college as well, and in working in groups and the whole area of critical thinking. One I think that was very striking, and one I think we have a little bit of work to do, is the whole area of cybersecurity. All right. Companies probably don't really see it as a current, but more importantly, don't see it as a future skills need. And with a lot of them now working out there in the cloud, and if we bring in the whole area of automation and etc., there's data flying. So we have to look at that. And as one company, I think, who spoke about, if you get one cyber attack, you'll know all about it, you know. So that's an area that we definitely have to. But I do think what came out of it as well is that companies on advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, digitalization, automation, they don't really know what it is, right? So we have to I suppose, dare I say, educate them on what it is and the possibilities of it.
Yeah, it is something that keeps coming up actually just in general kind of business media stories is around that whole issue of cybersecurity and not losing sight of what you need to do on it there. Sounds very promising overall. The manufacturing sector in the Midlands, relatively strong given everything that's happening out there?
Absolutely, it is strong. I think it's one of our flagships. And like when you mention manufacturing, it's so diverse. It is from the science, the pharma, the medtech, the food. You know, we all know the companies. But more importantly, I think what we have to do is work with them on trying to help them to support with regard to getting their vacancies filled. But more importantly, the whole area of upskilling and reskilling. And a lot of information we got here, which was very interesting, Ronan, was they want to work with our education and training providers in designing courses and modifying courses. And that's very encouraging, you know, because they know they have to give some time to, I suppose, back to the kids and more importantly, I suppose, our undergraduates and then the whole area of lifelong learning. So most of them want to work with, I think 70-odd% of them said, yes, we're interested.
Absolutely, yeah, because it's there and you can see that actually happening. And even on the show here, we've featured that, like between the likes that you said, the lifelong learning in the various technological universities, the local ETBs, even the role Sullis and everybody playing, it's all feeding into the one thing. But John, if somebody wants to get a copy of the report, where can they get it?
Yeah, listen, there's no problem. It's on the regionalskills.ie website. If you contact yourself or whatever, we can get it out there. We have a meeting of the Advanced Manufacturing Group next week and we're going to officially launch it. So there's copies of it. They're all electronic copies. And more importantly, they're there. And regionalskills.ie, and there's a link there for Midlands.
Absolutely. Look, for anyone listening, it's definitely worth having a look there, have a look through it as well. Some really crucial information. And as I always say, it's great to have a data set and a point to start with and see how we can help those companies and sustain that employment and those great companies. Because with them all, the level of innovation and entrepreneurship in them is just absolutely astounding. John Coslow, thank you so much for coming over this evening. John is Regional Skills Forum Manager Midlands, and he's been speaking there about the Midlands Advanced Manufacturing Survey 2022, which has been officially launched next week. So you got it first here on Midlands 103. Focus here this evening on Taking Care of Business very much on Midlands manufacturing sectors and indeed the skills shortages and the future skills needs that exist within that sector. And very thank you to John Coslow there for, before the break, giving us a very comprehensive overview of the key findings of the Midlands Advanced Manufacturing Survey 2022, which will only be released next week, but copies are available already electronically too. So very much worth a look if you're in that manufacturing sector. Now, if I mention the word polymer to you, do you know what polymer is? A certain section of you will say, absolutely, you probably know intimately what it is. You've probably worked with it or you've studied it. I know myself when I was in school and we had a talk from certain colleges, the word polymer was mentioned for those of us who looked to pursue engineering careers. We didn't really know what it was. We probably didn't do any investigation into it. But I know in the last number of years too, I've heard about it so much. At every advanced manufacturing kind of seminar or plan, there's so much talk about polymer. So to find out more about exactly what it is, but more crucially, how you can generate careers in that and what and the types of businesses in the Midlands that are involved in the polymer sector, I'm delighted to be joined by Catherine Collins, the Network Manager at First Polymer SkillNet. Catherine, very good evening to you. I suppose, in a nutshell and briefly, what is polymer and what kind of industries, I suppose, and companies are in the Midlands that are involved in that side of things?
Hi, Ronan. Thanks very much for having me on your show this evening. I'm delighted to have the opportunity to talk a little bit more about the polymer or the plastics industry. At Lone, we have a very long heritage of offering, you know, polymer education. I studied myself in the late 80s. And really, I suppose there's so many industries involved in polymer production. So you have the medtech industry, automotives, packaging. So a lot of products we would use on a daily basis are made from plastics or polymers. I don't think I suppose people realise how important they are, particularly medical devices, life-saving devices that will be made from polymers.
And even John Coslow just touched on that there before the break. Like, you know, we even know that parts or components for Tesla cars and some of the biggest car brands are made in the Midlands, which people might find astounding, but it's happening there. So the role then that First Polymer SkillNet plays in it, I assume you're playing a role in trying to maybe get people into the industry in the first place, but and to try to fill those very gaps and vacancies that John was speaking about.
Absolutely. So there's huge opportunities in the polymer industry. And as I said, at Lone, our university here in Athlone offer a full-time undergraduate polymer degree. But there's lots of other opportunities through polymer apprenticeships and through part-time programs with ATU Sligo that we're also involved in. But there's so many opportunities for technicians, engineers in the industry, very exciting careers. I know from working with companies that there's a huge shortage, particularly around the engineering space in polymers. And it's a, you know, it's a really exciting career, particularly working if you're working in medtech or automotive. Like, as you mentioned, the Tesla cars, that's Murgal and Castle Pollard make the vents, the ducts for the Tesla cars. So there's a lot of exciting areas you can be involved in, and across throughout the country, particularly the Midlands, but also in the Northwest, Galway and Dublin as well.
Yeah, I think it's estimated there's about 200, you know, innovative companies in that sector generating over 1.7 or 2 billion euros worth of sales every year. Over maybe 1.25 billion of which that is actually exported, like, so significant sector too. So what types of training courses or what type of engagements have you got with the sector in order to try and fill those skills gaps?
So we provide a wide range of programs, Ron, and particularly, obviously, directly. Injection molding would be a very popular process to manufacture polymer parts, but also extrusion. So Athlone Extrusions here locally in Athlone would be a very well-known company in that space. And we also provide a lot of maintenance training, kind of troubleshooting technical training around electrical maintenance, PLCs, that would be applicable to any manufacturing industry as well, but also polymers. But we're the only skillet network that actually has its own technical training centre based in Athlone. So we have a lot of machinery donated very generously by suppliers. So it mimics the same machinery that's out there in industry producing these parts on a daily basis. So we have a lot of equipment there. So trainees can get hands-on. And during COVID, we actually delivered a lot of blended training. So we still do some blended training, online training. There's a lot of trainees coming physically to our centre from all over the country doing hands-on technical training and just learning how to, I suppose, optimise and work these processes to the optimum, so to ensure that they're competitive and their companies are, you know, being very innovative and competitive as well.
For such an innovative sector then, how do you, you know, redesign courses or how do you keep up with the modern demand then? Because I presume a lot of things like digitalisation, automation, robotics is coming into that sector too. So how do you keep the training courses then right up to speed with what companies need here and now or maybe in 2 years' time?
Well, I suppose you're right. The industry is very heavily automated and we do have a lot of robotics and automation at our centre as well. But we have a voluntary steering group from industry. So these are key engineers and managers from companies throughout the sector. And we meet very regularly. They're always advising us on what's the trends that they're seeing in their own companies. And we also obviously link very closely with TUS, our local university, and also ATU and Sligo as well. And the APT, the Enterprise Ireland Gateway Centre, the Polymer Centre at Athlone as well. So we're always kind of keeping our ear to the ground, listening for the latest technologies, working with the companies, working with suppliers, trying to make sure that the technology available in our centre is the latest. And we're obviously incorporating a lot more automation. We also work with Irish Manufacturing Research in Mullingar as well, and we've developed some programs with them on some of the latest technologies in the polymer space. So we're always trying to make sure that what we deliver is, you know, some of the processes that we would deliver training in haven't changed in 30 to 40 years, but there's been new technologies introduced to make them more innovative and competitive and faster cycle times and different things that have been introduced. But some of the processes haven't changed hugely. It's just the machinery and the technology and the digitalization component of it that has.
And if somebody was in a different sector and wanted to move into that whole area of polymers, is that something that can be done? And if so, how would somebody go about doing that?
Absolutely. And we would have worked actually in over the past with job seekers or recent graduates. So we've had people, we've had a guy who worked as a truck driver who's now a polymer engineer. We've had somebody who managed a shop, who's a shop manager who's now a polymer engineer, because they saw the opportunity. They had a friend who worked in the industry and they could see there was great progression. And I suppose there's an ability to gain degree level qualifications while working full time, maybe even in a different sector. But we also run conversion programs as well, and we plan one as well for the middle of next year for, you know, job seekers or recent graduates who are interested in getting into the sector. And it really gives, immerses them in all of the technology and allows them to get hands-on with the machines and see if it's for them. But there's definitely lots of career opportunities in the sector.
Yeah, John Costello kind of hinted at that as well, that somebody might start off on an apprenticeship and then as they develop, you know, in the workplace, they can go and they can add on qualifications. And I know for yourselves, like, you offer qualifications right up to level 10.
Yes, we work closely with some of our partners. So we ourselves directly at our centre can offer level 5, 6 and 7. And then we work with ATU Sligo and TUS in Athlone right up to level 10. So anybody can start at whatever entry point and exit where they wish, but you can go from a level 5 qualification right up to a doctorate level at level 10 with our partners. So it's great to be able to have a progression path from the very lowest level right up to the very top, and people can, as I said, enter and exit wherever they like, and, you know, and get a really good career regardless of what level they're at, because there's so many opportunities at all levels within the industry.
if we were able to get enough people into the sector and, you know, start to fill those vacancies that exist in it as well, what is the potential, do you think, of the polymer sector, even here in the Midlands?
Well, there is great, huge potential, because all of the companies that we are working with are expanding. So you have Technimark and Longford is expanding. We have there's a new plant opening in Kilkenny. So a lot of the companies we know are expanding. They're just struggling to get the people locally. So there's lots of opportunities to upskill in polymer, and there's definitely is a great opportunities if you can do that. So there's the part-time programs with ourselves. There's conversion programs next year as well. So there's lots of opportunities. All of the companies are looking to recruit, but quite a few are expanding significantly over the next year. So it's really, really exciting. And some of them are in the medtech space. Some of them are automotive. Some of them are a mix of different industries. Even in the construction side of things, a lot of construction products are made from polymer as well. So there's lots of expansion happening. So it's really a good time to get into the industry, definitely.
John Costello mentioned how, you know, for a lot of engineering courses, that there is maybe a challenge in getting students into the courses in the first place. How are you finding things in the polymer side? Are people still looking at it as a first course of study, maybe to go into maybe at loan and do a degree in polymer engineering?
I think it's still a good opportunity, but I suppose we need to promote it more as well, you know, across the industry. And we're working together with, you know, with all of our partners to try and do that, particularly on the gender balance side of things. We'd like to see more females coming into the industry. I know when I studied it myself in the late 80s, I was the only female in my graduating class, if you like. So it's improved a little bit, but we'd like to see more females regardless coming into the industry. So we're working with a couple of other skillet networks in medtech and connected health, and we're actually launching a new study on gender representation in the sector, just to try and promote I suppose the exciting careers for anybody, male or female, but just to try and encourage more females to consider, you know, STEM careers and particularly polymer as a great opportunity.
And you look at the likes of even, say, national schools or secondary schools and making people, because I think awareness is the key to it. You just touched on it there as well. Like, if we make people more aware of what these careers are, or indeed what the technology is, because I could imagine school children going, wow, if they just knew what's been made and using polymers across the Midlands.
It's really, exactly, it's really exciting. We actually do an engineering expo every year in Sligo as well, and there's a lot of national school children come to that, and they're really excited and enthused by what the industry can do and the careers. But I think you need to catch them young, and when they haven't really made up their minds quite at that stage, and they're still very enthusiastic, and I suppose their minds are very open to a lot of different options as well at that stage. But as I said, we have a lot of plans over the coming year with our partners and stakeholders, particularly TUS and the Irish Polymer Group and IBEC, who promote our network as well, to try and just get the message out there, particularly at a younger age, at a primary school level, but also at secondary school level as well, and even TY students, to look at all of the various options across the sector, because as I said, there are so many, and a lot of the companies are expanding significantly over the next year.
At risk of really just kind of revealing the engineer that's in me, but I think that's where our school tours should go too. There should be a day out where it's kind of for fun and games, but there should be some tours as well, some of these facilities, just to show people what's happening, because it's absolutely amazing. But Catherine, thank you so much for coming on this evening as well, and keep up the great work with First Polymer SkillNet. Catherine Collins there is Network Manager at First Polymer SkillNet. You can find out more there on firstpolymerskillnet.com. They've been set up since 1999. But just again, just to kind of give you that high-level overview of the sector, it's estimated that there's about 6,500 people directly employed in the polymer sector, and that's almost €300 million worth of wages paid every year. And as Catherine has pointed out, similar to what John Costello said earlier, there's massive scope for more recruitment there, more people to join that sector. So maybe it is something that you or a loved one might be considering, or maybe just weren't aware of yet, but hopefully this evening's information might help you and maybe set you on a potentially very lucrative and very fulfilling career path. As you know, a central theme of tonight's show has been skills gaps in the manufacturing sector around the Midlands, and both John Costello and Catherine Collins spoke at length there about how transferable skills and people can transfer from one industry into another. So if you are looking for a job and you want to engage in that sector, then lots of options there too, because one guy who's looking for a job apparently as of this evening is Cristiano Ronaldo. He's going to leave Manchester United with immediate effect, which is probably no surprise given what's transpired with him over the past week or two. Now, one thing we can say about Ronaldo is he definitely would be able to afford the rent around the Midlands, but it's becoming a bit of a challenge for people. And I suppose as we talk about attracting people into sectors, we have to have accommodation and affordable accommodation for them to live in too. Because landlords leaving the rental market is one of the key reasons for rising prices in the Midlands. That's according to Ronan Lyons, author of the latest daft.ie report, which shows the average cost to rent a home in the region is €1,303. There are only 35 properties available to rent in the three counties, 19 in Westmeath and 8 in both Offaly and Laois. The Trinity College Professor of Economics says if supply doesn't increase, we can never expect prices to stabilise.
If we're losing, say, 5 or 10% of our rental stock, and we're only replacing or adding 1 or 2%, then the problem is even worse than somebody like me thinks it is at the moment. Whatever about building new rental stock in Dublin or maybe in Cork, smaller scale landlords leaving the rental market in Athlone, in Tullamore, wherever it might be, that is a real factor and we need to understand it better.
The government, of course, facing a lot of scrutiny over the housing crisis and the lack of housing stock becoming available, and particularly new stock. A junior housing minister has cited construction costs and labour shortages as the key challenges preventing government from exceeding housing targets. The latest AFTAD report showed the average cost of a home in the Midlands to rent is €1,303. The government has outlined a target of 33,000 homes to be constructed next year. But Longford Westmeath Deputy Peter Burke says they need to aim for 40,000 if rent prices are to be stabilised.
The big challenge for government is to get to 33,000 houses and beyond. So we hope to exceed 28,000 this year, and hopefully in 2023 we'll get over 30,000. But we're very clear, we need to get closer to 40,000 than 33. That's because there's such a lag over the last number of years.
Outside the manufacturing sector too, you often think about the tech sector there, and there's been a lot of layoffs and proposed job losses there too, many of which would probably be absorbed by other companies, and it may in turn present opportunities for more local companies. And one Midlands organisation is offering the victims of tech sector redundancies a place to socialise whilst the job hunt. 14% of the workforce at Stripe will be laid off, as well as 140 people at Twitter Ireland and over 300 at Meta, Facebook and Instagram's parent company. The Webmill Hub in Mountmellick is inviting those affected to come in and network with other companies at the remote working site. Manager Paddy Boogie says they're trying to think of themselves as facilitators for people.
As someone who was made redundant myself many years ago, it's not a nice place to be. But having said that, what we want to do, I suppose, here in the Webmill is we have to think of ourselves as facilitators for people. We're not just like a hotel where you get a bedroom. You don't get a desk in a hub. What we've tried to provide is contacts and networking opportunities for people.
It'll be very interesting to see if the hubs begin to fill in the next couple of months and where a lot of those people who have been laid off by all those big tech companies will end up to. Hopefully a lot of them working more locally, because there's great options for them out there. So hopefully tonight's show has brought you a new insight into different sectors and things that are available for you in the Midlands or your family members, and it's been of use to you. A big thanks to John Costello, the Regional Skills Forum Manager, and to Catherine Collins, from First Polymer Training SkillNet there, speaking about that sector, and to Jennifer Doyle from Milby Studio, talking about conscious consumerism ahead of Black Friday. Talk to you all soon. Take care. See you next week.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Laois, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.